The next time you walk into a bank or a school or a post office, or almost any building for that matter, have a look around and be aware of your surroundings for a second. You'll notice that there's probably some art just begging for your attention. Maybe it's up on a wall, maybe it's a sculpture in an entryway, or maybe it's even just the way the building comes together and brings light into the space in which you're standing. There is art all around us. It's kind of how we mark our environment. What are the things we want to see every day that drift out of our consciousness but still affect us, even as we walk past? Some part of us is taking note of that art. The concept of art stretches back thousands of years, and through innovation with science and the needs of our culture, today's artist stands on the shoulders of giants and is able to produce both astounding works that call to our attention otherwise unknown abstract concepts, or simple works that simply allow us to eat food off of a plate, albeit a very neat-looking plate. Well, the artist needs to learn their technique from someplace, and this process, too, has been going on for thousands of years. Well, in St. Cloud, there's been a project going on over the last few months that has involved the recording of the collective memory of the visual arts in St. Cloud. It's been doing this by bringing people together who are a part of the history of art in St. Cloud. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's news feature, I'll be sitting down with retired SCSU arts professor Ted Sherarts, who has been the moderator of the Collective Memory of the Arts of St. Cloud, which has been hosted by Visual Arts Minnesota for the last couple of months at the Great River Regional Library in St. Cloud. So welcome to KVSC, Ted, and why don't we start off? You can tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Collective Memory of the Arts in St. Cloud.
I'm Ted Sherarts, and I've worked for 43 years at St. Cloud State in the art department. I taught mainly photography, but I taught some art history also, particularly contemporary art history, and some drawing. And then suddenly one day it was all over. I retired after 43. And since then, I've been thinking about the past, about people that I've known in the art students and people I knew in the art community. And that's one of the things that comes along with retirement, I think, is reflection. So just within the last year, Heidi Stedman asked about getting together on reflecting on the history of art in the art community. And to me, that's one of the most fascinating aspects of my life in St. Cloud. I came to St. Cloud in 66. I had never lived in St. Cloud before in my life and had never seen St. Cloud before. And suddenly I'm immersed in this art community. And the art community at the time was in the art department. But I began to realize there was an art community outside the art department. But I also began to realize that there was a kind of distance between the community and the campus and the state university, or in those days, the state college campus. So I looked for a sense of the art community, but all I saw was the presence of my colleagues, people like Bill Ellingson, who taught printmaking. It was very, all of the people in the art department, without exception, there were about, I think at the time, about 10 of them, all lived in St. Cloud or close to St. Cloud, so that the art community of the campus and its relationship with the town is changed quite a bit. And it's changed in many ways, and I became really interested in these things, and Heidi was too, because there is no book on the history of art in St. Cloud, and there's no script. It's just been played out, and there's been no recording secretary along the way. We decided that we should get together and try to get artists in the community to bring their memories. That's all we had to work with, you know. There are no notes, there are no files. There's There's no records that we know of.
Yeah, there's just art.
Yeah, just art and people's memories. And that's what we were after. It's people's memories. And it began, I believe, in November or December of 2011, when Visual Arts Minnesota had a gallery briefly in, I think it was, what was it called?
912
Gallery across the street from the Paramount Theater. They acquired that space just for a short term. And one of their first exhibitions was a kind of retrospective of Bill Ellingson's prints and paintings. And it was at that exhibition that we had a kind of little open-ended discussion, the first of a series, in which artists from the community were invited to come in and tell about their experiences and their memories. And I thought it was really interesting. We heard some fascinating stories, so much so that Heidi proposed to have it again, but this time we moved it to the city library and we had another one. And it became more interesting, I think, because more people showed up. And then they started bringing work, not their own work, but the work of artists that they had in their collection who were St. Cloud community artists. And so we began not only recalling events and anecdotes, and some of them a little kind of off color and or eyebrow raising. And that really, those little kind of whimsical moments really flesh out a story of the community.
Yeah, I remember a few of those where it's just kind of like, really, wavy gravy? No way. Or
yes.
Yeah.
Well, that alone, I won't even go into wavy gravy, but that, I had forgotten all about Wavy, who was a hippie in the 60s. And actually, he was part of, for a while, a band called Big Brother and the Holding Company, who accompanied some of the early Janis Joplin recordings. But he was also ran for mayor of Berkeley and eventually ended up, for some reason or other, in Annandale, Minnesota, at a place, I think it was referred to as a hog farm. But that,
and that traveled with them. And,
yes.
Well, and that's just kind of an example of the, you know, St. Cloud connection or St. Cloud area, central Minnesota connections with, well, people. There have been a lot of people that have come through here and a lot of people that have stayed. And, you know, we have all this art and a lot of it is right in front of us and we don't even see it, or we do see it and we wonder, well, where did that come from? Why do you think it is so important for us to be recording this history?
Usually, we're most fascinated with histories that relate to our own lives and our own culture. So I think St. Cloud, because it's become so much a part of me, that at least that's why I'm fascinated by it. And there's not many people actually doing serious work on it. And that's why I'm particularly interested in Heidi's project.
You know, it is definitely continuing to grow. So, you know, 60, 70 years from now, somebody can come back and be like, well, why is this relief sculpture on the side of a building important? Like the one just right next to the courthouse. There is a sculpture there that is just, I remember looking at it and I thought, what is this? Where did this come from? Why is this here? And there's actually a really deep and interesting story about that.
There is. I know the one you're talking about. And you're right. It's just about a half block south of the Stearns County Courthouse. It's on a granite wall of Aria Company, which does, I think, telephone marketing or something.
They're fundraisers for nonprofits for the most part.
Yeah. And, but previously it was a bank and it was called Zap Bank. And that's a family owned, locally owned, that was a family owned bank. And one of the members of the family was an artist, Ed Zap. And he carved that. I don't know when. My guess is the 1950s or early 60s. But it's a remarkable piece. It's very large and very abstract. Not abstract. It's a recognizable male figure holding something that is abstract. I haven't figured out what it is. It looks a little like a boomerang.
Or possibly there's like an atom floating above his head, possibly. And then there's probably a tree in the background is what I kind of thought. And you look at it, you're like, well, I'm not exactly sure what's going on here.
But there's enough there to tell you, there's a story going on here. Mm. And it's Ed Zapp, who eventually became president of the bank, built a new bank, and then years later sold it to U.S. Bank. So that's where the U.S. Bank is located now. But Ed Zapp found out. I had never met him before. I finally talked to him on the telephone not too long ago. People in the community told me that Ed Zapp was a driving force in the St. Cloud art community, especially his staging of the annual Zapp Art Show was in the bank, and it was, by many accounts, the biggest art event, visual art event, in the town for many years. And he offered pretty impressive prizes, and he had brought in judges from outside Minnesota to judge the show. So it was very exciting, and I have met several people who said the high point of their life was winning the Zapp Art Show. So yeah, that's coming across something like that, that sculpture by Ed Zapp, that can get your mind going.
Yeah, I do remember the last one of these that we had at the public library. One of the women there was talking about that was her first prize that she had won, was at the Zapp show. Now, she has continued within art within her field, I guess you could say, for quite a while. And everybody's got to get a start, you know. You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and in today's news feature, I'm sitting down with Ted Schwartz, retired SCSU art professor, and we're talking about the collective memory of the visual arts in St. Cloud as an ongoing discussion hosted by Visual Arts Minnesota. So, Ted, as we get back into this discussion, what do you feel that art and arts events do for the community?
Well, these things, Jeff, are very important to the community. And we all know that a community that has a thriving art culture is a community that thrives. And we don't quite know why. We know that artists don't make very much money. But we do know that people who collect art tend to do very well. The biggest seller of art in the country is New York City. And it's economically, New York City is one of the most thriving cities in the world. And if you look across just the United States, cities that have thriving art communities are cities that thrive economically. And if you compare that with cities that have professional basketball teams or a professional sports arena, the connection between economic health and professional sports is a little bit more tenuous, uncertain as to, and we hear that argument going on right now in the Minnesota State Legislature about what if we do lose the Vikings, how much damage is this going to do to the economy? And I think the opinions on that are kind of vague at best, but they are not about the arts community. For some strange reason, the presence of a thriving arts community seems to add to the economic welfare of a community.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting correlation. I've talked with Leslie Schumacher out at the Central Minnesota Arts Board before, and Heidi and I have had this discussion before as well, where we can look at the different sets of data, and there might not be a causal relationship, but the correlation, there's something behind that. If you think about it, who decides to move here. You know, it's, you know, say somebody gets offered a job at the St. Cloud Hospital, a doctor, and, you know, they show up to town, they look around, and they're like, oh, hey, yeah, this looks like fun. There's art, there's stuff, yes. I can do stuff. They come into town. If they're a doctor, they're successful, and or somewhat, you know, you would assume, and they do things, and they're able to spend money. And there's that elusive, well, what are people actually spending money on? But then you've got kind of a reflection or this correlation. You know, I mean, if they're going out to arts events.
Right. And I think I'm seeing more and more acceptance of that in our city leaders, including the mayor and the city council. I'm thinking of in particular, it's not just this particular event, but the Summertime by George, a series of concerts on Lake George during the summer. And it was immensely successful. People packed that place and brought in bands, mostly local bands. And there's just a whole feeling of well-being in the community with something like that. And I can't help but think that the city fathers are smiling, if you pardon the expression, city fathers and mothers are smiling about this, saying, yes, 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 this is the kind of community we want.
Yeah, because it really is. It's community. People come together. You know, there's the music, there's the people, there's the food, there's the different vendors, you know, selling things.
Yes.
You know? And I think that's kind of, you know, just going back to Zap, you know, maybe he realized this. He was like, you know what, we need something for people, and art can be that. So just kind of got that ball rolling, and, well, look where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think the Paramount Theater is another example of that. Not every person with a political sense would have signed on to that project to restore that old theater. It goes back to the 1920s, and it was in terrible condition. And they, I don't know how it was funded, but it cost a lot of money. And the city bought into it, and now it's owned by the city. And the city, I'm sure this city has to pay a lot of money to maintain that. But they know that this is one of the gems of the community. And it is as important to the community as the airport that they want to beef up right now is having a major airline stop at St. Cloud is important, but so is the Paramount, and so is that thriving arts community.
Oh, for certain. Yeah, going to see shows there at the Paramount or even, I mean, there's the big shows. You know, they'll bring in national acts, and then also some of our local musicians can pack that place too.
Yeah.
With their variety of shows. But then it's still an art space. You can go there. The whole Paramount Theater, you've got 30 or 40 or 50 people there for something odd. Like, well, when I say odd, I mean like, well, the Koyaanisqatsi movies. Are you familiar with those?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, years ago. You know, yes. It was right when I moved to town. It was like, oh my gosh, they're showing the, you know, Koyaanisqatsi trilogy. And the director, whose name is escaping me right now, he spoke after the third one. And I mean, I was sold on this town after that. Yeah. I was just like, wow, I know what I just witnessed. This was really cool. And you know, it wasn't packed, you know, there, but the people there knew what they were in for and knew what they were, you know, they were very interested in what was going on. So yeah, you're able to do that. Or there was another event I saw there. The Minnesota Dance Ensemble had a performance there. A good chunk of their funding was through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. So they were able to develop this thing. And, you know, there were maybe about 100, 150 people there. You know, watching this dance performance, this, you know, multiple different dances. But I tell you, there was a group of about, oh, I don't know, 20 kids from the Boys and Girls Club there. And they were amazed. You could see that these kids were having a life-changing event just seeing this. You know, happy kids. How can you go wrong with that? So I think that's part of this legacy of this history is, well, what are we leaving for that next generation. And it's like, well, who was this person that made this?
Yes.
And I think that's a part of a deeper connection to that art.
Yeah. And that's your mention of the, I think is the Arts and Culture Legacy Amendment. Yeah, the passage of the Legacy Amendment has had a remarkable effect, I think, on the arts communities, especially outside the Twin Cities, in places like Duluth and St. Cloud and Rochester and Brainerd and Bemidji and all over Minnesota. This has really energized people, whether they get the grants or not. It's energized them. It's made them aware of their own culture and their own art scene. One of the reasons why we're doing this, I think Visual Arts Minnesota might have some legacy funding. I'm not sure.
I think they're trying to get some for this. I don't think they have it for this yet, but they've gotten grants before. That's part of the nature of it these days. With you get a vibrant arts organization, and yeah, there's a lot of people doing a lot with the grant money, and that's, I think, the purpose of, you know, the Legacy Amendment is, well, here's some money, do something worthwhile with it. So now people are like, okay, it's getting pretty innovative, but there's some good programs. So.
Yeah, and your own arts and culture collage on every morning. You know, I'm a regular listener to that, and I think it's funded by Legacy.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that kind of brings together a lot of these things that we're talking about, what's happening right now, and a little bit of the background of each one. So that's a valuable record, as a record, beyond the fact that it's telling you what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Because, yeah, there are these things. You know, I keep track of that. And during fiscal year 11, I believe, the Arts Culture Collage had over 47 Central Minnesota entities did something. And there were over like 300 different events that were, you know, just discussed, promoted. What are these things? You know, what were they? You know, and they're it's out there. You know, what kind of things do people do? You know, to just, well, it's more than just their spare time. There's something they kind of need it to do this stuff. You know, just once you get into it, you're into it. You know, you're enjoying it.
Yeah,
but it's more than just enjoyment, like sitting there watching a funny TV show or something. It's I don't know. How would you describe that feeling?
I'm not good at describing my feelings. My wife will tell you that. But I'm thinking right now about my granddaughter, who is about 12. 13, she's going on being a teenager. And this morning on my Facebook, her mother, my daughter, her mother said, Lauren is staying home today. And so we're talking about her gymnastics career. Lauren wants to be a gymnast. But when they get that subject is exhausted, Lauren says, why can't we have cable TV like our neighbors? It really sucks to be homesick and not have cable TV, just 4 channels. And so she said, well, when I was a child, you know, and she says, oh, Mom, I've heard that 100 times, and all my friends have cable TV. And mixed in with all of that is this feeling like they're telling stories to each other. Mom and, you know, Melody and Lauren are telling stories to each other, and they're really enjoying themselves, even though it might sound like they're complaining. And ultimately, that's the kind of feeling I get about art, the arts community, about the, like, this collective memory meetings. We're sitting around telling stories. Now, academically, maybe it's a big mess. You know, we're not, except for your role in recording these stories, we're not really ordering all of this stuff and making it into a digestible form yet. And maybe someday somebody will. But I think it just adds to the joy of living in a community that's interested in its own culture and its own art.
Well, what do you think the state of St. Cloud arts is right now?
Monday night, there's two things going on, and I don't know what to go to. Now, that's when I came here 36 or 46 years ago. When I first came to St. Cloud, that was never a problem. There was not that many things going on. So you watch television. Monday night, or late Monday afternoon, there is an opening at Kiel Gallery on St. Cloud State Campus of a guest artist who I really want to hear about. And at the same time, over in the Performing Arts Center, Christian Trombley is having a guest artist, a new music composer, and I want to hear him. And I am really torn. I want to hear both of these people are really fascinating. And that kind of thing is happening more and more in this community. That excites me.
On a Monday.
On a Monday night.
Also on Monday, Visual Arts Minnesota has Sketchbook, either at the White Horse or at Biology. And then also the reoccurring, the Jazz Night.
The Jazz Night at the Veranda Lounge.
I know. I mean, there's art all over. It's a historic building, and it's jazz, you know. And the musicians down there, I have seen a few St. Cloud State music professors drop in. You never know who's going to be there, but, these folks that love jazz, love playing jazz, and are really good at it, poof, there they are.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And on a Monday night, four incredible things that, and it's accessible.
Yeah.
When you say driving across town in St. Cloud, that's only going to take you about 10 minutes.
Sure, sure, sure.
Well, thanks for talking with me today, Ted.
Jeff, I really enjoyed it. Let's do it again sometime.
And that was retired St. Cloud State University art professor Ted Sherarts, winding up our discussion on the collective memory of visual arts in St. Cloud, as hosted by Visual Arts Minnesota. The next meeting of the Collective Memory of the Arts in St. Cloud has not been scheduled yet. However, more information will be posted on the Visual Arts Minnesota website at www.visualartsminnesota.org. And this is also a place where you can contact Heidi Stedman, Executive Director of Visual Arts Minnesota, if you would like to get involved with the Collective Memory Project, either by participating, meaning hanging out and talking about it, or possibly hosting it. And as more information is forthcoming, you can be sure that you'll hear about it here at KVSC, so check back on our website at kvsc.org under the Area Events link at the top of the page. This program has been funded through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and this has been Jeff Carmack reporting on Arts and Cultural Heritage for KVSC Radio, a proud member of AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.